Just so we all on the same page, we are looking this week to really try to focus. We're looking at the Old Testament scripture today. So we're actually going into Jeremiah. And Jeremiah was a prophet that lived during the Babylonian exile, which would have been somewhere around the 6th century BCE. So about 500 or 600 years before the death of, the birth of Jesus. So so we're going to look at Jeremiah's verse today, and let's go and look at what that is real quick. It's going to be, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. Then you will call on me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all of your heart. I will be found by you, declares the Lord, and will bring you back from captivity. I will gather you from all the nations and places where I have banished you, declares the Lord, and will bring you back to the place from which I carried you into exile." So we'll talk a little bit about what was going on at that time, that the people of Judah were banished into the Babylonian exile, and so they were in this place that was new to them. And Jeremiah was trying to speak to them, bringing God's message to the people, saying, look, you've been banished into exile, but you will go back. There's a lot of hope. There's a lot of things here. Do not worry, but there are things we need you to do while you're there. So just be mindful that that is the scripture that we're looking at today. So I've got to be honest with you. I must admit that when this whole COVID-19 thing started, I was not prepared for everything that was going to take place. I made a lot of assumptions about the toll that it would take on my life. Now, don't get me wrong, I left the office on March 13th ready for a break. It was the beginning of spring break at the college. There was a lot going on, and actually it felt like the pandemic hit at just the right time to give me a few weeks break. And so I was looking at that. If there's a right time for a pandemic, I thought that was it. I assumed online learning would last for a couple, 2 to 3 weeks after spring break. And I had no idea at the time that it would be as prolonged as it has been, and that it would be as disruptive as it has been. Because what was a few weeks of online learning has now turned into months. The semester is about gone, and even next fall looks like an online learning experience for me. So the whole year is being impacted. Now, don't get me wrong, when March 13th hit, I knew the severity of what was going on. I had heard the scientists and the researchers discuss the virus and the severity of its impact on us. I'd even had a coworker at the college telling me about her husband's conversations with local and state health management agencies and officials, talking about the intricacies of this virus. He worked at Duke and was a part of their COVID-19 pandemic team. So I was hearing some pretty serious stuff. Comparisons were being made to the 1918 flu. It was coming in waves, not just once. And we also knew that this was going to be very contagious and lots of people would be impacted. In some ways, I was aware of what we were looking at. However, I also knew that our society was not built to withstand a months-long shutdown. I mean, we have a culture of going to work regardless of whatever the circumstance may be. We have a chance, maybe our boss or employer expects us to be at work if we're sick. Maybe we expect ourselves to be at work if we're sick, right? There's so many things that go on. Maybe we've exhausted our time off, our paid time off, and we have to go or we're going to be fired. That's our culture that we live in. So I knew that that was going to impact how long this quarantine or this self-isolation would take place. We live in a culture that says if we're sick, we go to work. If our children are sick, we send them to school, and then we go to work. If we have a fever, if we have sniffles, a cough, we went to work. Our society was built to ignore the inconvenience of illness. I assumed after a few weeks, this mindset would prevail fairly quickly. I know it ultimately will triumph. We're already starting to see signs of opening up around the globe. Not that it's a good thing, but it is what it's taking place. I'm somewhat shocked that it hasn't happened already. The nature of such things is another sermon, okay? The ethical implications of a culture that is built to satisfy productivity and financial gain at the expense of health and safety and well-being of people, that's clearly something the church should be discussing. The fractures of such a society that is built this way, okay, around the world, we're seeing issues such as unemployment. We're seeing millions of people without health insurance, okay, during a pandemic, no less. Families are trying to figure out creative and feasible ways to put food on the table and how to pay the rent. Please note, the church should be fighting against the unjust makeup of the system. And sermons should be radical and emphatic so that we do not allow such things to continue in the future. So no worries, we will get there, just not today. Today, I want to discuss something else. We're in the midst of a series discussing now what, right? The mindset that comes after Eastertide. Jesus has been crucified and risen from the grave. And as a church universal, we are moving to a final ascension and Pentecost experience. With that said, we are following the mindset of the disciples and the earliest followers of the post-resurrection landscape. What are we responsible for now? So for the disciples, Jesus was that charismatic leader, that person who was in charge and made the decisions. The disciples just followed along. With him gone, it is their turn to make the hard decisions. So what do they do? What's next? So we're following them at Covenant in 2020, asking the same question. We're post-Easter. We understand that Jesus has come and is fairly with us, but what do we do now? So to build some comparisons, the disciples were in the midst of chaos. The Jewish elites were assessing their power or asserting their power, and so were the Romans. The disciples were unsure of their next move. Like our predecessors, we too are in chaos. The pandemic is altering our livelihoods and our culture. We may not have power-hungry religious sects or control-oriented governments breathing down our neck. Well, actually, we do, but I digress, right? We live in very uncertain times, okay? We live in a very uncertain world. Do I go to work? As things begin to open back up and threaten the lives of those around me so that I can afford food, rent, health insurance? Or do I stay home, okay, and live the life of loving my neighbor, keeping them safe at all costs? Those are questions we deal with right now. So to dig into this, we must dig into an earlier story, the one that I just read a few minutes ago. A story that can inform our behaviors and actions in such uncertain times. It is also a story our Jesus following authentic disciples, those 2,000 years ago, would have been able to read. The Jewish literature, what Christians call the Old Testament, was filled with stories of people and the tribe who were the descendants of Abraham, God's chosen people. The Jewish scriptures were also filled with prophetic voices, bringing the message of God to the people. These prophets would help the group make the right decisions and the right choices. They would basically take what God had willed for them and explain it to the people. Okay. Today, we're discussing Jeremiah. His audience was a Jewish sect who was ultimately swallowed up by and dispersed into the massive empire of the Babylonian Empire. A people in a strange new land with new laws, rules, customs, and expectations, trying to figure out now what. Just when life was getting tough for the group, in walks Jeremiah with this message from God, a message to help them understand here is what is next. So we're reading again from the 29th chapter of Jeremiah. Comes this: "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. Then you will call on me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. You will seek me and find me. When you seek me with all your heart, I will be found by you, declares the Lord, and will bring you back from captivity. I will gather you from all the nations and places where I have banished you, declares the Lord, and will bring you back to the place from which I carried you into exile." So as the disciples were reading this 2,000 years ago, in their kind of uncertain times after the death and resurrection, they probably read these words from the book of Jeremiah a bit differently. Their focus may have been on the risen Jesus. When you seek me with all of your heart, I will be found. Well, Jesus was with them. He had not yet ascended, so therefore, Jesus provides a solid interpretation of this message. We're not afforded that same luxury in 2020. Jesus is not present in bodily form, and we have to decipher the message in a new context. So certainly, we are in chaos. It feels like exile. We are a people in a strange new land with new rules, expectations, laws, customs. The pandemic has upended our entire way of life. The hopeful and optimistic message from Jeremiah feels good and sounds right for the times. However, we still have to figure out, now what? I think it has something to do with expectations. How do we approach the chaos that surrounds us? Nadia Bowles Weber, she's an author and public speaker. She discussed in a recent blog, she discussed our natural inclination to find our way through difficult situations by focusing on the end result, something we desire at the end of this. For example, as the pandemic began, most of us grieved the loss of, you know, kind of short-lived, kind of in the near future life events. We grieved those. Like, it may have been a dinner meeting with friends, or it may have been church service on Sunday, or something next week, maybe a concert that you were going to go see or a play. So we grieved those initially, but as 2 weeks turned into a month, and a month turned into 2 months, and as we continue to progress, that mourning period gets longer and longer, bigger and bigger. So what we started to do is focus on, okay, as soon as we get out of this pandemic, I'm going to do blank, right? Or I can't wait till we can all get together and do blank, right? Fill in the blank, whatever it may be. We start focusing on that future that is beyond. The future will ultimately make us happy and bring us fulfillment. I mean, it feels like Jeremiah gives us permission to do that. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. I mean, so I did it. I mean, I was looking towards the future to help me through this. Okay, so this concert was going to help me. That trip coming up in a couple months is going to help me through this. Those work responsibilities that are going to be back on my plate very soon are going to be there for me. So I was looking to the future, and it seemed to be the only thing that made me feel like life would be okay. Forgetting the current hardships and struggles to recognize the impending satisfaction that lay ahead of me. I was focusing on what was going to happen, not what is going on right now. It sounds like a good idea. And we feel validated by the prophet Jeremiah, but I'm here to say that this is not an appropriate means of getting through this. Ignoring the current situation and all that comes from it, and looking only to the future for one's happiness and fulfillment can be ineffective and dangerous. I mean, don't get me wrong. I've heard people saying, don't worry, we'll get through this. And I appreciate their optimism. And when it comes from people with similar beliefs, I'm grateful for their encouragement to trust God's promise that we will get through this. But one of the things I think we need to be careful of is just getting through it. I think the bigger question we need to ask is, what are we to learn from this? Remember, the purpose of God's plan, as noted in Jeremiah's passage, is to prosper us. So we cannot forget that in the same passage, Jeremiah tells those stuck in Babylon to call on me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. Seek me and find me. Seek me with all of your heart, and I will be found by you. This does not sound like a prophecy telling us to bypass the current situation and look to the future. We have an obligation. We have a responsibility. We're supposed to be doing something, okay? The words call, pray, seek, find. Actions required by all, and even in the midst of chaos. Again, Nadia Bowles Weber tells a story in this blog that helps us understand the situation. She says, an admirable in the U.S. Navy, James Stockdale, survived 8 years in a POW Vietnamese prison camp. When asked who of his fellow prisoners struggled to make it out alive, he replied, the optimist. Oh, they were the ones who said, we're going to be out by Christmas. And Christmas would come and Christmas would go. Then they'd say, we're definitely going to be out by Easter. And Easter would come and Easter would go. Then they said, Thanksgiving. And then it was Christmas again. He said, they ultimately died of a broken heart. Nadia Bowles Weber wants us to remember the Stockdale paradox. It is the ability to hold two opposing but equally true things at once. She said, you must have faith that you will prevail in the end. And at the same time, you must confront the brutal facts of your current reality. You must hold both of those at the same place. I truly believe that the prophet Jeremiah wanted to remind the people of Judah of this very thing. He was telling them to seek, to pray, to call, to do something in the midst of their chaos, and at the very same time recognize that hopeful future as something God will bring forth in some way, shape, or form. We are called once again to do the same thing. If and when we can stop and check in with ourselves in this very moment, we must say we will prevail. As awful, mind-numbing, and exhausting as all of this is, we must have faith in the power of human love and creativity, resilience and kindness and humor. And we must believe that God to be the source of our love, creativity, resilience, kindness, and humor, which means there is an eternal supply to which we can draw when we don't have what it takes. But at the same time as doing that, we also must remember God is already present in the future. We keep pinning our hopes and fears to. So maybe it's safe enough to let them go. The story reminds us that we must create a life for ourselves, not bypassing the here and now because it's unpleasant, wondering when will it all be over? When will our misery end? We must recalibrate our thinking. We will not get through this by setting our hearts on any event in the future that we will not get through this by setting our minds and fears about the future. To be sure, today has troubles, plenty of them. So it's a waste of energy to import our imagined troubles of tomorrow that aren't even true or real yet. It's not the healthiest thing for our happiness to be contingent on the future having to look a certain way. Jeremiah reminded us that we are called to be engaged, to be involved in our present moment, seeking God, calling God, praying to God, recognizing our current situation and God's entanglement in it. And at the same time, know that we can and will move into the future where God too is present. So I'll leave you with this. Those who know anything about me understand that I love being a student of world religions. I love the fact that we can understand and know God in many ways. This conversation leads me to think about the Buddhist perspective of mindfulness, a concept that requires the practitioner to be mindful in the moment. Mindfulness is about cultivating the quality and power of mind that is aware of what is happening without judgment and without interference, helping us to live in the present moment, the reality of the present moment, the reality that is hard, the reality that is scary, unflattering, and honest. You see, we suffer according to Buddhism, not because there's anything inherently wrong with us, but simply because we misunderstand the nature of reality, of what is real. We don't understand it. Buddhist practice helps us to come to terms with reality by cultivating our awareness of what is real. These are impermanence. Nothing lasts forever. Suffering. They use the term dukkha, but it is suffering and insight. Mindfulness can help liberate us from fear and suffering. Living mindfully in the moment with concentration, we see a deeper reality and are able to witness impermanence without fear, anger, or despair. We truly see it as it is. The Buddhist perspective of mindfulness allows us to interpret Jeremiah's prophecy even more fully. It is not enough to simply recognize our lives in our present situation. We are called to understand it, all parts of it, the hard parts, the ugly parts, the difficult parts, the scary parts, the lonely parts, the angry parts. We are called to recognize them as they really exist. Wrestle with them, give them breath, give them life so that we can progress forward to that elusive future, that ending, that place that God knows how we'll all be together. So let me end on a hopeful note. If we can engage our current reality with mindfulness, meaning a clear understanding of what is real and what is not, truth in the moment, we can turn resolutely to these brutal facts. And even so, we will prevail. There is a global pandemic. We will prevail. There will be death. We will prevail. There are long hoped for events in the future that will not happen. Yet we will prevail. There will be lost things and people and income and dreams, and still we will prevail. And all we really have is this day, this very day, and it is enough. It ends up, maybe Jesus was right. Amen.